Welcome to Bruderhof Radio, a bi-monthly program broadening the bounds of discourse on progressive thought and action. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman. This week on Bruderhof Radio...
You know, I'm tough on crime, too. That's why I'm out there working with the youth. You can be tough on crime without arresting or abusing people. My idea of being tough on crime is I want to eliminate crime because it's abusing and it's taking people's lives, and I'm tough on drugs, and that's why I'm out there...
In the turmoil surrounding the recently exposed corruption, misconduct, and brutality in the Rampart Division of the Los Angeles Police Department, it's been easy to overlook the people most affected by the scandal. The focus remains on the police department, which has been accused of framing suspects, planting drug samples, and using racial profiling. While the LAPD's method of, quote, cleaning up the streets is clearly in need of an overhaul, much less attention has been paid to more constructive and successful efforts to halt gang violence and street crime. The primary targets of the frenzied war on gangs in L.A. in the mid-1990s were inner-city youth of Central American origin. Most were illegal immigrants whose parents had been killed in the U.S.-sponsored civil wars of the 1980s. Joining gangs was often the only way for them to survive in America. As these immigrants were arrested, often on trumped-up charges or under broad gang association laws, their illegal status caused many to be deported right back to the very Central American slums they thought they had escaped. And they brought their American gang culture with them, leading to a dangerous symmetry between gangs in Los Angeles and cities like San Salvador, the capital of El Salvador. While the LAPD tried vainly to quell violence with more violence, others were seeking peaceful solutions to the growing problem of Central American gangs. In 1996, a human rights worker named Magdalena Rose Avila moved from Los Angeles to San Salvador. Almost immediately, he noticed the similarities between gang members in the two cities and decided to do something to halt the violence. Using techniques of nonviolent counseling from his former jobs in the United Farm Workers and Amnesty International, he formed an organization called Homies Unidos to offer youth in the high-risk communities of San Salvador a chance to diminish and prevent violence in their own lives. Along with English language training and a variety of vocational programs, including computer technology education, Homies Unidos offered gang members a chance to strengthen their skills and enhance their employment opportunities. News of the positive results of Rose Avila's program spread, and soon a branch office opened in Los Angeles, where former gang enemies now work together for peace and justice in ways the LAPD can only dream of. Today on Bruderhof Radio, Pete Momsen of Blue Magazine speaks with Magdalena Rose Avila about the beginnings of Homies Unidos and how it has grown to become an internationally recognized force in gang member rehabilitation and community building.
When I went to El Salvador, I didn't go to work with gangs. I went to work on a book about my poetry and my life. But because, you know, I've worked for Amnesty International, the Cesar Chavez Foundation, and other community groups, when I saw somebody who really had the energy and the spirit of wanting to change, then it's difficult for you as a community organizer to say no to their aspirations. And so what it started out is, you know, my just helping them get together, listening to their ideas, and the further I got involved with them, is, you know, once you fall in love with an idea or a people, you just know that you've got to participate and help them. And the further I got into it, I never knew we were going to get into an organization or that it was going to last me for over 4 years and working with them. But you find that yourself caught in a whirlwind of hope, a whirlwind of change. You find yourself on a road to the future. And you say, I want to work with them. And I told the guys, I'm sorry I met you. I don't want to be involved with you because you guys are going to break my heart. And they said, what do you mean by that? I said, because some of you are going to die. And I said, and I don't want to suffer that. You know, once I fall in love with you, I don't want you to die. And sure enough, we've had some of those difficult deaths to deal with. In San Salvador, we've had numerous threats against our organizations, both by agents of the police, the clandestine police by other gangs who do not want us to exist. We've had the shootings. Our president, who was our first president, Hector Pineda, was better called El Negro, was shot 4 times, and little man who was with him was shot 2 times. People just really irritated for him being a vocal spokesman about gang issues, and, you know, by a gang member who doesn't want us talking about the stuff. And any time that you get out of violence, it's a high-risk situation. What happens is, you know, with our guys is, let's say we decide to leave violence, right? We leave our guns at home. The people that we personally have offended over the years, just because we stop shooting doesn't mean that they stop shooting. Just because we've left violence doesn't mean that they've left violence. And people really who have a hatred against what we do or personally against some of us, they know we're unarmed. So they say, well, you know, now I can cap this person. You know, I can take him out. And they do. And that's what hurts. And it's not all gang members who are, you know, who are still active in gang activities who hate us. It's just a few crazies who want to make a name for themselves and feel that we're an easy target. And we are, because we're unarmed. You know, we're going to come back to them and talk to them. Even after they shoot at us, like the guys who've done the drive-bys, you know, we'd still welcome them back in the organization if they decided to change and say, yeah, join us. Because that's what you want, is you want people to change. But having somebody that you've invested a lot of your time, a lot of your heart, to see them killed in their youth, especially after they've turned their lives around, it just breaks your heart.
I guess that would be, you know, a real hard question to deal with. You know, how do you explain or how do you kind of justify, you know, asking people not to defend themselves on some level?
I say, you know, physically, if, you know, somebody's after you, defend yourself with whatever's close at hand. If it's a table, a broom, a stick, your fist,
yeah,
defend yourself. But, you know, if you're carrying a gun, you're in the wrong business, you know.
Yeah.
You got to stay active. It's really hard to ask people not to carry their guns. Really, really difficult. That's the most difficult thing in your life. But, you know, one gang member told me, you know what? I've been out in La Vida Loca, the crazy life, as they call it. And, you know, I wasn't afraid of anybody, and most of the time I didn't have a gun. And they said, now for something good that might change somebody else's lives, maybe my children's lives, why not put my life at risk? Why not take a chance? But, you know, deep in the heart of hearts, none of us want to die. None of us want to die, and when you start in this process, you begin to say, man, there's really some things to live for, because if you're involved in La Vida Loca, the gang life, you know, you make it, you don't expect to go beyond 25 years of life, because you see all your other homeboys or homegirls killed before they get to 25. So you go, nah, you know, I don't expect to live, but once you live, start living, and you see what we provide them, a vision of a future, a vision with hope, and, you know, a different kind of life, then you don't want to die. You know, you want death to stay away from you. And that's when you start worrying about being killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before, you know, yeah, take me out, you know, I'm just like my other homeboys, them. You know, write a tattoo or write on my tombstone, RIP, you know. Johnny was here. But for any of us who have a reason to live, we don't want to die.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to give, not only to gang youth, but all youth who are looking lost out there in society, because there's a lot of youth who really don't care if they live beyond tomorrow.
Yeah.
And but if you give them a reason to live, that there's something they can do, and a lot of times people want to do it for others, then that's when you turn the corner. Then people say, man, I'm going to take care of this body. I'm going to take care of my mind. I'm going to do something good because I'm going to make a difference. And that's really what we educate the gang members about. Is, you know, I don't care. You know, you can get healed. You can get out of violence. But, you know, when you help somebody else and they all know a homeboy or a homegirl who they can make a difference with, And the best teachers of nonviolence are gang members themselves. You know, I do a lot of talking about gangs, and I do a lot of talking about nonviolence. But really, the best teachers, the best examples are gang members themselves. I come out of a gang area, but gang era that's many, many years ago, nothing like the gangs of today's. You know, my days, it was the Cro-Magnon chocolate eye gangs. You know, we rode on dinosaurs. Not compared to these guys with their automatic weapons, with their fearless warrior attitudes. Mm-hmm. They're a whole nother entity. So even though the guys tease reporters, because the reporters always, you know, because I'm fairly well educated, they say, oh, you're the expert. They go, no, he's not the expert. He's the observer. We're the experts. Yeah. And it's true. Gang members are the experts. So if you take the experts and you give them one more expertise, which is nonviolence, building self-esteem, give them a vision of hope where there was despair, then they can reach other people. There's nobody, I mean, for all of us, all of us who are older adults, and I count myself because I'm in my 50s, you know, if we turn on a couple of good active organizers who are youth, it's the youth that organize the youth. The youth know how to talk to each other. They know their dreams. They know their visions. They know what they want. And all youth, before they get into violence or a crazy life or drugs or whatever, they get somebody who really can communicate and on their own level. Those are the people that are going to make the difference. Because the kind of work that we do with gangs can be translated to any youth. Youth want leadership, but they want leadership that understands them. Yeah. And that's the success of our program, that they keep me off the streets. And the guys and the women go talk to people on their peers. You know, people who understand jail time, who understand street time, who understand hard times, who understand despair. And that's what you need.
You're listening to Magdalena Rose Avila, founder of Homies Unidos on Bruderhof Radio. If you've got questions or comments about today's program, give us a call, toll-free, at 1-800-778-8461. That's 800-778-8461.
Do you see any kind of difference in the level or type of street violence between L.A. and San Salvador? Especially, like, you know, on the one hand you have, like, death squads and stuff in San Salvador. On the other hand you have, you know, like, the crash unit in L.A. You know, what's the dynamics with all that?
Well, the thing that you have openly in San Salvador, formally and informally, are death squads that take out gang members at different points in the history, and now they don't have so formal as the death squads in San Salvador, but you have vigilante groups that spring up every now and then that are paid by businessmen to eliminate gang members. There is no difference between the police in San Salvador and the crash unit. They're both corrupt, and if you're a gang member, you cannot have any violation of your rights investigated, either in San Salvador or either in Los Angeles. And the police in San Salvador, just like the Ramparts unit, are willing to arrest and detain you on a regular basis. Listen, for over a year, our unit in Los Angeles has been harassed by the Ramparts division, saying that they're going to break the organization and break our program. And that we filed complaints against those policemen and for harassment and for physical abuse. And do you think anything happens? Nothing. It's as if we were in San Salvador filing a complaint against the police there. And that's what our work is about. But, you know, corrupt police, this is a phenomenon that goes on in El Salvador, goes on in Los Angeles. And anybody who lives in New York City, Detroit, Chicago, any place, Philadelphia, any place where you have, where they organize a special crime unit, a special drug unit, you can bet that those people are going to become corrupt, because the Ramparts Division became a gang unto itself. Now, because of their illegal activity, they're having to release over 100 gang members who were innocent, and gang members who told the DA, who told the judge that they were innocent, but yet they were being prosecuted and turned over because the judge, the DA, nobody would listen to a person off the street. Now, we have to watch nationally our police, because every time they're put into a special unit, like in New York, there were rogue cops with too many bullets out there trying to shoot anybody who was of color. We must make our police departments cleaner, better servants of all of its citizens. You know, we in the gang community, we say, you know, one of our members is breaking the law, fine, arrest him. Arrest him under the laws and the civility of the courts. You don't need to kick him the way they kicked the guy and beat him in Philadelphia.
Yep.
That's pure rage. You know, if they have that kind of rage, become a hockey player, join the National Football League, get on a soccer team, get rid of some of your energy and your violence, but don't take it out on a person you're arresting. You know, it's one thing to arrest a person, and if they haven't learned how to subdue an individual, then something's wrong. We have an attitude in this country that if you do, you can do anything to anyone that you suspect as a criminal, and what people like Mayor Giuliani in New York, our mayor in Los Angeles, Reardon, they want the streets clean. So what did they say? In the neighborhoods where the Ramparts Division was going, that the streets were clean. In San Salvador, what the police would say, our streets are clean of gang activity. And you will find in every place where you're having police and community problems that they are not prosecuting the claims by the citizens against the police. And unless you have due process, you're going to have rogue cops.
It seems like a lot of the, at least here in New York, a lot of the people who claim to be, you know, quote, liberal or progressive can be some of the people who are most insensitive to anybody they consider kind of, you know, a gang member or coming, you know, from a bad background or something like that.
Well, what happens to some of our friends who call themselves liberal or progressives is that they've been intoxicated by the propaganda that all gang members or street people or immigrants are dangerous. And so what they've done is to try to make themselves because they all want to be elected, they all want to sound like they're really right in there with mainstream America. So they're going to say, we're going to be tough on crime. So their idea of tough on crime is using the death penalty, giving people long sentences, arresting, shooting, doing whatever to anybody, abusing their rights. And it's wrong because it's an abuse of power by the states. And they should know better. They should know better that you really have to, for everybody, you know, if you want to call yourself anything, you ought to call yourself, you know, I don't mind being called the person who defends the Constitution, because if the Constitution was protecting all of us, we wouldn't have this kind of abuse with people. But I found too many people who are in, you know, any one of the political parties who says they're tough on crime means that they're tough not on crime, they're tough on individuals who are profiled as being the people who perpetrate the crimes. You know, I'm tough on crime, too. That's why I'm out there working with the youth. You can be tough on crime without arresting or abusing people. My idea of being tough on crime is I want to eliminate crime because it's abusing and it's taking people's lives, and I'm tough on drugs, and that's why I'm out there. And you can do that. You know, I don't want anybody breaking into my house or stealing my car, but the way I'm going to do it is working with the youth in my neighborhood. That's being tough on crime. Being afraid of crime is having tough or stupid laws that really don't resolve anything. You know, right now we're warehousing people in prisons when we give them life sentences. Right now, if you take in a person about your age or the age of your readers and listeners, it costs about $25,000 a year. When you get about my age, we cost the prison about $50,000 a year. When you get above 65, it costs a prison $75,000 a year to keep a person. That's going to bankrupt our budgets. You wait and see. Right now we have a whole class of prisoners that are coming up in the next 10 years that are all going to reach that $75,000 limit. They're either going to have to release them or they're going to have to start changing their laws so they're not imprisoning people. Because they're not set up in prison to take care of mass numbers of geriatric folk there. Yeah. But it's a real interesting thing. But no, I get very, very annoyed by people and people who are elected officials who say, oh, I'm tough on crime. You know, the governor, it took a Republican governor in Illinois to say, you know, he's tough on crime too. But when he saw that over half of the people that were ready to be executed in Illinois were innocent, he said, well, you know, I got to put a moratorium on this death penalty business. He said, this is unjust. And people were shocked. You know, but if he just used common sense, he said, something's wrong here. Look at the judicial system. Everybody who's in prison says that capital punishment is for those without the capital. If our poor citizens had money, black, white, yellow, red, brown, most of them would get reasonable sentences. I just have a nephew, because he had no money, had to use a public defender, is now serving a 26-year sentence in prison. He really should have gotten like a 5 or a 10-year sentence, but 26 years? And that was because of bad legal counsel.
Yeah.
So we have to think about what we're doing with our country. You can't imprison all the blacks. You can't imprison all the poor whites. You can't imprison all the brown people. You got to do something different. Be tough on crime. That means being tough in your neighborhood, with working with the youth, not imprisoning them, trying to give them a chance, give them a second chance, a third chance, having them, give them a vision of hope.
You know, I noticed on your website, you know, you talk a lot about, you know, forgiving and learning to forgive and healing and stuff. And that, you know, I guess goes for larger society as well. Do you see that as a big part of what you do, like, you know, with your group of youth?
Well, with the gang members, we try to get revenge and payback out of their heart. That's what a lot of we're taught in society, you know, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And that's when you keep your anger at its highest level, stoked up there at building the flames of revenge. And we have to eliminate that in our politics, our education, and our laws. Really, you know, when we start forgiving people, building reconciliation, no matter what they've done to us, whether it's on a personal level, a business level, a criminal level, then we begin to understand what really is the issue that we need to work on here.
While Magdaleno Rose Avila continues to focus his work with Homies Unidos in Los Angeles and San Salvador, he says he is inspired by the recent protests at the Democratic and Republican conventions in Los Angeles and Philadelphia, and before that in Washington, D.C. and Seattle. After all, global capitalism and corporate greed play a major role in the creation of the environments that gangs flourish in, both in the United States and in Central America.
I think the most important part for all of us was that here was the energy and the spirit of a group of people who were willing to raise their voices, put up with incredible situations, and did a lot of organizing. I mean, the organizing that was done by youth was incredible. And they organized themselves. You know, just like I was telling you earlier, they don't need other leadership. They know what to do. They organized themselves and formed the most incredible coalitions. And the most exciting part to me, because since the 60s, I have not seen that kind of organization by youth, for youth, and in behalf of the entire community. I think it's important that when we create this atmosphere for change, that we make sure that we don't exclude parties, that gay lesbians are invited, gangs are invited, that Asians are invited, all the groups, you know, that they feel welcome and to participate and to do that. When I was involved in the anti-war movement in the 60s, we as Latinos weren't always welcome at the table with the rest of the white leadership in the peace movement. Now I think that the youth in this movement are more multicultural, more multifaceted, but we just have to ensure that the agendas of other peoples are not lost, no matter how small they are, and that the community is there open and willing to talk to them. Because if we're really talking about IMF issues and that, we're talking about a whole bunch of people of color who were affected by that around the world. And some of those people of colors are immigrants here in the United States right now. So we got to respect that also. And I think that's one of the connects that hasn't been done with the people, is that because of IMF policies, you have people who are working and suffering in the same kinds of sweatshops that create the bio-natural disasters that we get around the world on a regular basis. But I think the most important part is that once the youth begin moving, and they have begun a movement, it is impossible to stop. And we just have to help them to make it stronger. I'm excited about the potential that they have to change the face not only of America, but the world.
You've been listening to Magdalena Rose Avila, founder of Homies Unidos, an international organization working to stop gang violence through positive community building and educational programs in Los Angeles and El Salvador. For more information about Rose Avila and the work of Homies Unidos, visit their website at www.homiesunidos.org. That's www.homiesunidos.org. That's all for this edition of Bruderhof Radio. This program was produced by Andrew Zimmerman. Magdalena Rose Avila was interviewed by Pete Momsen of Blue Magazine. Visit them at www.bluemag.com. That's www.blumag.com. Bruderhof Radio is a production of the Bruderhof Communities, a Christian movement dedicated to nonviolence, communal living, and justice. Members pool their time and talents and share all goods and property in common. For more information about the Bruderhof Communities and Bruderhof Radio, call 1-800-778-8461. Again, that's 1-800-778-8461.